Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello, welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. It's your host, Mason Cosby. And today I'm joined by Leslie Vinetz, who is the author of Profit Generating Pipeline. I'm going to go ahead and get this out of the way. And I'll say this multiple times. It is a fantastic book, specifically on generating more of your best customers that give you the most profit. So if you're trying to figure that out, we're going to talk a lot about that today. But if you want a deeper dive, go buy the book. Leslie, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much. I might steal that strap line and put it on like my website somewhere.
Please do. Because when we think about the idea of profit generating pipeline, often when we look at how do we actually prioritize different accounts in the world of ABM, I'm talking with a lot of marketing and sales teams that only focus on the CAC side of the equation. So like, who are the cheapest customers to get? But cheapest is not best. And often we lose the finance side of it. And we don't actually look at, are these people profitable? We just look at like high revenue dollars that were relatively inexpensive to get on the front end. But I am super curious as we dig into that framing, which is how do you get more of your most profitable customers? First, I'd be curious to hear from you. How are you determining the actual like most profitable customer?
Yeah, a lot of things. And I think it also depends on the stage of the business, because if you're a little bit earlier in your growth journey, the most important customers for you to get might be really big logos or maybe companies within a specific industry where you know you have the greatest growth potential. So it might not even be revenue related. It might be those logos that allow you to get the social proof to hit your knock-on growth goals later, like particularly if you are in a subscription business, and we know that the revenue for subscription businesses primarily comes from like renewals, upsells, cross-sells, not net new. You can't constantly only be generating revenue from net new. I look at the types of accounts that are most likely to sign multi-year deals, that are going to renew, at a higher rate, that aren't just going to renew flat. So I love this question because I think, sure, it's good to know who's going to be able to close fast. It's like, it's good. You have to have some of those deals in there that are going to be the people that are like ready to buy and ready to buy right now. And they're going to be your fast revenue. But if that's the simplicity with which you decide what a valuable account is, there's serious missed opportunities.
I love specifically the framing of who renews quickly, early, and at a higher rate. Again, as I talk with so many marketing and sales teams, they're only focused on the acquisition side. And that's really when the profitability battle begins. Because if you get a ton of customers in that churn within their first 3 months, like you're building a dying business that you have to replenish every single quarter. And I've seen plenty of people, specifically in the services space, that do that. So I love that.
I didn't grow up in SaaS, Mason. I grew up in service-based businesses. So like non-recurring revenue businesses and business intelligence and branding. And so I think that gave me a slightly different perspective on what good looks like, because my job was never just to get somebody in the door. It was to figure out who was going to be able to refer me to other people in their network, who was going to be able to buy again in the future. So I think it gave me a slightly different perspective from the very beginning of my sales career, that my job wasn't to sell the roadmap and get somebody in the door and make it another one of my colleagues' problems. I owned like the full cycle AE and account management from day one. So I always had an eye on what will make this person not just buy, but then be pleasant to work with and be a good customer of mine and my organization's.
Yeah. We've always shared that like early experience of being a full funnel AE, and like I sold print advertising. So like tough market to sell in. But you think a lot differently about the customers when you also have to manage them after you sold them. Like it's not a pitch and ditch. It's like a pitch and maintain. And like if you lie during the sales process, it's like, well, I have to also deal with those ramifications. So I think you and I have both always thought more holistically around like, I don't want them to just buy, I want them to be
happy. And I don't want just their dollars. I want their dollars and all of their friends' dollars. And the way you do that is like making sure you're actually finding those people where you can truly deliver extraordinarily well.
For sure. And like, we only have one reputation. So I also, just out of principle, don't want to sell something that I'm not sure a person is going to be able to get the ROI from. Because like, fine, maybe it puts some, maybe I hit quota, maybe I get my accelerator, whatever it is. But I don't know. Maybe it's just like my anxiety talking, but like, I don't want that person to be let down, to have egg in their face on their job. Or I also just want to be a good person.
Crazy. When you actually think about like who buys more, who is happy, and like, who do you have a high degree of confidence you can deliver for? And like, if you determine those things, that's probably your best customer. So I love that framing.
Yeah.
I'm curious, as you've worked with quite a few revenue teams, one of the greatest challenges that we're seeing is the marketing to sales handoff. Like, marketing does all of these different things, and I'm not going to dig into that. Like, sometimes marketing teams are throwing spaghetti at the wall. So there's a lot of things happening. And then they say, this account's ready, you should do something. And what we're seeing right now, at least in my experience, is there's quite a few AEs or SDRs that have been primarily focused on inbound qualification. And that transition to, you just don't have processes for it. So I'm curious, as you're looking at that handoff, more specifically, how can marketers make it easier for salespeople to actually have the intelligence that they need to then appropriately and intentionally do outreach?
A couple of things pop into my head straight away. One is that the reason for outreach is never that the person is an MQL. And I see that language used a lot internally, like they hit their MQL points. So now they're ready to move into your funnel, and then it gets translated into the SDR voice or the AE voice. Like, you downloaded our white paper, you attended our webinar, book a time. And like, we've talked a lot about my sales philosophy of earn the right. And it's always, what have I done to earn the right to make this ask of a person? And saying, I saw you downloaded a white paper, let's chat for 30 minutes. Like, that doesn't, there's a disconnect there, right? So I think some of the way that we talk about MQLs doesn't paint the right picture for, hey, we're still in the process of earning the right to their attention, to their time, to their consideration. And I think, honestly, a lot of MQL processes are a bit broken. And I would say, two of the ways that I see like challenges, or the things that like sales gripe about the most, is that folks that are non-ICP contacts will become MQLs. And so they are being forced, bullied, cajoled into calling individuals that they know are not the right person to buy, simply because that individual has downloaded like 7 white papers over the past year. So be really, really tight with your MQL criteria. And it doesn't matter how much they've interacted with the brand. If they are not an ICP contact, like, they're not an ICP contact, and engagement isn't going to suddenly make them an ideal persona. And I think that the other one is very related to that we put more emphasis on the value of engaging with our marketing collateral than the prospect does. We think, oh my gosh, they have attended 2 webinars and they looked at this case study. Like, they must just be chomping at the bit to buy from us. And that is not the case. I don't think this is just marketing's problem, but I think salespeople, like, make sure before you do the outreach, look at the other signals that are going on. Have they just hired a bunch of people, or maybe they fired a bunch of people? Do they have a new CEO? Or are they new in seat? Like, what are the other signals that are feeding into why this may or may not be a right time to buy? So that when you do reach out, it's very focused on them. Here's what's happening in your world versus here's how you interacted with our company.
I'm going to out myself for a moment, because that really hit home. We hosted a webinar last week with the CMO of Mural and like the AVP of sales at Mural on like, how do you visualize stuff? So like, we use visualization tools So I reached out to a couple people after the webinar and said, hey, I'd love to hop on a quick call and actually help you like map out a visualization of your current strategy so you can have some internal conversations. I got a response from somebody that said, hey, thanks for reaching out. I'm not running ABM, nor do I ever intend to run ABM. And I was like, got it. So like, you're like, I was actually really interested in Mural, not your stuff. I was like, cool.
Yeah.
Really appreciate that. So like, because we attend the webinar, apparently even on account-based marketing, doesn't mean they're going to run ABM. So don't just, yeah, I love that framing of just like, their interaction with your world is incredibly small. Their interaction with their world, very large. So focus more on the things that are happening then versus their engagement. I think that's a great framing. How do you, and this is going to be such a large question, I'm sure you dig into it way more in your book, but when you think about operationalizing that, like how do you actually then make it a foundational principle for a sales team to effectively operationalize not just all the engagement that they're doing with your brand, but I refer to it as like signal stacking. So it's not just they attended a webinar, but they attended a webinar. They're also in a significant hiring stint. They also just had a leadership change and are also looking to probably raise a round based on some of the signals we're seeing in market. Like how do you operationalize that in a way that is personalized, but then the other word that I often hear is scalable. So like, how do you marry all of it?
Carefully. So the approach that I take to like the quote unquote personalization at scale question that gets tossed around, let me take a step back. So what I think is endemic to sales is a narrative that you can either take a quality approach, an ABM style approach, or a quantity approach, like unleash the spam cannons. I call BS. I think that the right approach for most organizations is to meet in the middle. Having worked for very large organizations with really high ACV, ARR, I have run ABM strategies. Like they are the chef's kiss when you get to run them. That's not the right strategy for many organizations because of the price point with which they sell at, but that doesn't then give them permission to just spam the TAM, which is what we see most often. So what I see them do next when they're trying, and I'm going to give them credit because they are really trying to do it right, is that they have been told that contact level hyper-personalization is what the customer wants. They don't. They do not want that because the way it sounds 99% of the time is extraordinarily disingenuous. Like, hi, I love what you're doing in the sales landscape. It's a game changer. Buy my widget. Or we're just reading the news to them. I see that you're the title at company. Yeah, because I'm the one that took that job and then I'm the one that put them the title on my LinkedIn, but thank you for reading my LinkedIn back to me. So it comes off like it's very disconnected. It's very disingenuous. It doesn't work. And I simply do not believe that most sales price points require contact level personalization for all of the outreach. So what I teach instead, which is a lot easier to operationalize and to create into repeatable processes, is three steps. One, get tight on your ICP, but like that is not enough. You can understand what your, like your, you know, your qualified, your ideal personas are. And then once you get there, you still need to build lists that have 4 to 5 other tiers of filtering in there. So you're not just even trying to send out messaging to your entire ICP. It is not even just healthcare, like it's the sub segment of healthcare where you're only reaching out to long-term care facilities and then only the CHRO at a long-term care facility, because what they care about is a lot different than what like the director of recruiting cares about. And then they need to have 200 beds to really be a good fit. So you figure out what that means for revenue and employee count and you add in those filters. So you add enough filters that you feel really confident that you know what a CHRO at a Northeast-based long-term care facility with at least 200 beds care about. And then you can build your messaging around that. And because we are never sending like willy-nilly email there, LinkedIn message there, we are always building it into a strategic sequence beforehand. That gives us a moment to say, here's the list I'm going after. I'm going to create a segment specific value prop. And then I'm going to think about how I can tell the story of that value prop through a micro campaign, like through multiple messages, multiple touches on multiple channels. And only then can you start building the message and start creating the sequence. And I already understand, as I say, that sounds like so much work. Trust me, and I know you already trust me on this one because you do this with your clients, like spending a little bit of time to get that right both allows you to move faster later. That is the personalization at scale, but it allows you to move faster in a way where you're reaching out to the right person with the right message at the right time. So you're getting much better results.
Leslie, this is a guy I actually asked you on the podcast, because again, we hear from marketers a lot on the marketing and sales front around alignment, but the simple nature of, as an example, I get emails all the time that talk about, we work with agency owners in Whitestown, Indiana, just like you. And I'm like, Whitestown, Indiana is a 4-block city. I'm pretty confident I'm the only agency owner that lives in Whitestown, Indiana. So like that contact level personalization, I love that frame of like, they read the news back to us, versus what you just outlined is how do we cohort our accounts and our personas around the specific issues that they're facing today, and then actually educate them. So it's personalized, but actually around the things that they care about versus reading the news. I think that is such a great framing. And again, to your point, it takes a lot more work on the front end, like a ton more work. But
but like, honestly, Mason, people can get started without, like you were earlier talking about stacking signals, which is the bar I think we should hold ourselves to. I think that's where everybody should aspire to be, is like creating those segmented lists, segment specific value props, tying them to signals. That's ambitious though. Like, I understand that not everybody currently possesses the tech stack, the skill sets, the mindsets, whatever, to get there. But even changing language from HR executives like you to, I spoke to the CHRO of X company and Y company, like even just adding in a bit of additional specificity, which you can do because you know exactly who you're speaking to, increases believability, increases credibility, and then it increases reply rates because we've earned some of that trust.
Yeah, specifically from the marketing side, like as you're building out industry specific landing pages, go the extra 5 minutes of work to curate the testimonials that are from the same industry. Don't just pull your best testimonial that makes you look really great. It is better to have a testimonial from the same vertical in the same industry that's the same titles of people you're sending a landing page to. Like, it's not... Leslie, I don't know if you agree with us, but what
I found... I don't know if you remember this, but that's one of the very first things that we ever bonded about, because I was working at Procurement Leaders, or maybe I'd like just left Procurement Leaders. And one of the last things that I had the privilege of working on there, because the marketing team was like chef's kiss humans, was an ABM, industry specific ABM campaigns. And the very first one we tested was telecom. And so they built this beautiful telecom specific landing page. And so when you opened it up, it was a video testimonial from like the CPO of British Telecom or something like that. And then there was a link to a case study from, I don't remember, like another, but whatever, like TELUS or something in Canada. And so it was very simple. It was three sections, but it was a testimonial. It was scrolling logos of our other telecom clients. And then it was a case study about the specific thing we did with telecom. And then the call to action buttons to like book a call at each part. And then the very bottom of it, because it was a business intelligence, it was like a research company, was a call out for a category report specific to what they were doing. And it was so cool. Like, people loved it. And yeah, that was extra work for sure. But like, in that space specifically, we're selling to Fortune 1000 companies. Like, how many Fortune 1000 telecom companies are there? So if we want to penetrate that particular piece of our ICP, like, we're not going to do that by saying IT and technology companies such as yourselves.
Absolutely not. And I'm imagining also Fortune 1000 means that they are high profit, high dollars. So like, you can invest the extra time, energy, and effort on the front end to make sure you're actually being personalized.
So like, those deal sizes started at $52K, just like for reference for people. So that's why it was worth putting in. And they usually did 2 to 3 years. So they were, you know, they were six-figure deals. So it was very worth putting a little bit of extra effort. But I will also tell you, Mason, when I joined the company, they were taking more of a spray and pray approach. They had a list of Tiger accounts that they thought was an ABM list. It wasn't. It was their dream accounts, but it was very much based on this organizational centric way of looking at the market versus who in the market can we actually serve best? Like who will be our best customers versus who do we think will be the biggest feather in our cap? So it was really powerful to see the transition, not just an approach, but it was really a transition in mindset for how to best penetrate the US market, because that's what they hired me for, was to come in as their like first strategic US hire to penetrate the market here. So it was really like, I loved that job. It was really fun to get to work with that entire team because everybody was willing to try something new and different and put in a little bit of extra effort to see if it was worth the results. And if it wasn't, try something else. But if it was, awesome. We have a strategy that we can then operationalize because it is repeatable.
Yeah, that's why we actually added to our definition of ABM. It's a revenue strategy that aligns marketing, sales, and customer success from a set of shared target accounts that reflect our best customers. Because we have seen, I'll give an over generalization, but like we've seen too many SMB software companies target Apple. It's like, we might be aligned on that, but it's not realistic for us. So
yeah, maybe we're saying to people before we leave that the biggest logos do not mean best accounts.
Are we super clear? Like, we're 2 years into this. We've got some really cool logos on our website at this point, but I'm even thinking about taking some of those logos down because we've got two clients that are multi-billion dollar companies. And we do great work and it's fine. But as we look at the best customers for us, they're typically more in the mid-market space. So even though great big logos, we find that our programs typically work better for that $20 to $100 million type business. So anyway, Leslie, as I come to a close, I'm curious for you, if somebody's trying to think through step one, you outlined, clarify your ICP, get really honed in on the exact problems that your buyer is experiencing, and then cohort for outbound purposes. If a marketer is listening into this, what is something that you wish they would actually bring to sales to make that process significantly easier and better aligned across the two teams?
Ooh, I wish, I'm a huge fan of, this is very related to the earn the right philosophy of making deposits before I make asks. And when I say deposits, I mean sharing resources that genuinely share value, that are not like a sales marketing resource. They're something that is an actual gift. And one thing that I've always struggled with, and I struggle today with my clients who are like, well, marketing gave us this. And I'm like, this is hot trash. That marketing wants to create valuable assets for sales, but too often they create like marketing assets that are designed to try to like sell via a PDF. Yep. And I wish that more often marketing would bring assets to the table that were just a gift of value and knowledge to the customer instead of something that was very like company product feature centric. We don't have to look good. If we look knowledgeable and trustworthy, people will want to come to us to find out if we can help them solve the problem. So I wish marketing would bring more like buyer-centric, knowledge-centric materials to the table instead of so much company-centric material.
Love it. I said this often, about 70% of our content that we publish is about problems. 25% is about all the viable ways to solve said problems. And 5% is actually about how to buy from us.
Outcome focused, problem focused. That's the way to go. I run 100% inbound funnel and I maybe 5% of the time have any call to action about like how to get in touch with me and how to buy from me. I'm just out there sharing knowledge. And then people say, she seems to know what the heck she's talking about. Maybe we should buy her book, buy the book. Maybe we should buy her book. Maybe we should see what she's talking about and see if this problem she seems so knowledgeable on that we also have is one where she can lend some help. So I think that that's bang on.
I love it. Well, Leslie, thank you so much for joining me today. If you want to find out more about you, where would you point them?
I would point them to the book website, salesledgtm.com/book, or literally on any e-commerce platform. I'm also a chronically online person, so I post on LinkedIn every day and folks can find me there.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I heard that there's a book coming out. So
a book. Had you heard about the book?
I may have heard about the book through a text that I got this weekend telling me to buy the book. So if people want to buy the book, is it available everywhere that books are sold?
It really is. Like, I'm even on like Barnes and Noble. I'm like, book, like, it's a book.
It's a book. You heard it here. Probably not first, but you did hear it here. You should go buy the book.
You did hear it here. Buy the book.
Leslie, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we'll see you guys in the next one.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.